We would like to say a special thank you to this week's sponsor, MSD Ireland, Inventing for Life.
Hello and welcome to the Answers for Cancers podcast. I am your host, Anne-Marie Fay.
And I'm Michelle Matthews.
Together with some of Ireland's leading experts, we want to unravel what it truly means to have cancer.
From consultant diagnosis to treatment plans, from managing your symptoms to supports available, we have it covered. So whether you're a nurse working in oncology or have been personally affected by cancer, this podcast is for you.
Today on the podcast, we are joined by the wonderful Martin Sweeney, who joins us today to speak about the support for men after a cancer diagnosis. Martin speaks about his own diagnosis of prostate cancer in 2015 and how the support he received, particularly from ARC Cancer Support, led him to becoming a group facilitator for men with prostate cancer, and his involvement with the Irish Cancer Society Public Patient Involvement Panel, and the work that he does with the urology team in the Mater Hospital with the PROSPER programme, which helps prepare men for a prostatectomy. Today we speak about some of the side effects experienced by prostate cancer treatment and how speaking about those personal and intimate issues can be central to a person's treatment outcomes. We are so grateful to Martin for his time and wisdom, and we hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did.
Firstly, Martin, thank you so much today to speak about a really important topic, which is support for men after a cancer diagnosis. I think most people will agree women are better at seeking help and looking for support. And I suppose myself and Anne-Marie know firsthand from working in the area how difficult it can be for men to open up about how they're feeling. So we really appreciate you being here today to shine some light on a really difficult topic. I'd love to know, firstly, just a little bit about yourself and your interest in the area.
Certainly. Hi, Marie. Hi, Michelle. It's lovely to be on the podcast. Main interest, I suppose, came about because I was diagnosed with cancer myself in 2015, with prostate cancer. And from that point, I began to get support from ARC Cancer Support Services. And I got involved in volunteering from a very early stage with ARC. I got excellent hospital care as well, I might add, in the Mater and Beaumont hospitals. But I did find ARC filled a gap and bridged a gap that was there and still is there, I think, in terms of my own particular needs and concerns about after treatment and so forth. So I volunteered very quickly with ARC, and I now facilitate a peer group support monthly group meeting for men with a prostate cancer story. And that's held on Zoom at the moment. It's very informal, easygoing conversation with men. It's available for anybody who wants to join just look up the ARC website. I'm also involved with the Irish Cancer Society's PPI, the Public Patient Involvement Panel. And I'm involved with Mr. Galvin and Catherine McGarvey and Nisha Simon in the Mater Hospital Initiative, the PROSPER program, which prepares men for a prostatectomy, which is the surgery I had. It's a kind of an intensive 3 or 4 hour course, which has a patient voice. And at the moment, I'm the patient voice on that. And I really enjoy that. So that's where the interest came from. I really am passionate about the area of improving after care, after treatment care for men and support for men. There are areas like mental health in particular, which can become an issue following a treatment. And sometimes the reason for that is that bladder control, sexual function, particularly in relation to my own experiences with prostate cancer, but depending on the cancer, be it colon cancer, testicular cancer, rectal cancer, you know, there are so many issues that men and women, of course, have to deal with, but as you know, prostate cancer is particular to men. So I suppose my focus is on making these issues central to treatment and breaking down the barriers that people seem to have about talking about these issues, these kind of personal, intimate issues that a lot of us find difficult to talk about, particularly men. And I might just say at the start that I think it's very important that partners are also involved in the discussion. And that's very important to say just at the start that when a person gets cancer, as you both know very well, it's more than just that person who is affected by that diagnosis, and particularly a spouse has a very big impact on their lives as well.
That's great, Martin. Thanks a million. And we'll definitely touch on that again in a little bit more detail later on in the conversation. I suppose, as you mentioned there, sexual dysfunction, especially after the likes of prostate cancer. In our experience, oftentimes men can find it really difficult to discuss this topic with their nurse, or sometimes when they're in with their consultant, they just sort of forget about it because you're really speaking about your cancer at that time. And I think oftentimes, I suppose in my experience in the hospital as well, there's not always a private place that we can have those conversations, and it can be very difficult initiating them in the middle of a day, you know, when there's people around. But what do you think men and healthcare professionals can do better to promote having these conversations?
Yeah, it's such an important part of the whole topic. And I suppose the most important thing, in my opinion, is that we make these topics an integral part of the consultation or the service or the discussion that's taken that doesn't happen at the moment. I think as well, you probably know this better than I do, that there's a different dynamic when an oncologist and patient are talking. It's very believable that the oncologist may be talking about life and with the patient, as is often the case. And a patient can sometimes feel that it's not important enough to bring up side issues, if you want to call them that, like sexual function, particularly to the moment they're standing up to go to the door with the consultant or the nurse, whoever it is. So as well as the shyness and the reluctance to talk about the topic anyway, that particular meeting is just not suitable, as you say, for that type of conversation. So maybe there's a need for professionals to perhaps be more aware of that, to raise the issue rather than wait for the patient to bring it up. If the patient doesn't want to talk about the issue, good and well, but at least bring it into the conversation. Try to make this subject as normal as talking about diet or physical recovery, but also the issue of having a sex life is surely as important as those other topics. So we have to make them part of that general conversation. And I think we all have a part to play in that, patient and professional.
Yeah, I think you're so right. We had a podcast not too long ago with a GP called Mary Rogan, and she actually said the exact same thing. She just said, as healthcare professionals, it's our responsibility to make it as normal as, like, how's your bowel function, or checking for your blood pressure and all these kind of things, you know. That's just to make it as part of our daily assessment. Absolutely. Another thing, Martin, that we hear a lot from men and women is just the fact that they think that they have to just put up with not enjoying sex anymore, that it's kind of, they're lucky to be alive, and this is just part and part of the journey, so to say. So, and then, as we know, like, sex is a huge part of every relationship, and everyone deserves to be able to enjoy it. Do you have any advice and ways that people can explore this during and after cancer treatment if they want to?
Yeah, I think, I suppose this is the thing that I am most passionate about, Anne-Marie, in that I really don't think we properly have addressed this topic. All cancer is cruel, as we know, but at least some cancers are treatable, and patients have some expectation of making a full recovery or very close to a full recovery. But that shouldn't be at the expense of everything else, and we shouldn't be resigned to the fact that we're going to lose so many other things in our life if we recover from cancer. I think we should aspire to return to the life we had prior to diagnosis. I fully appreciate that this doesn't apply to some cancers, and there are some stories that, you know, they're on a different level. But in terms of what we're talking about today, I do think that we should recognize the fact that we have a right to try to get back to as normal as a life as possible as we had before our diagnosis. It occurred to me during my treatment that the treatments, when I would bring this matter up in relation to sexual function with the professions I was dealing with, all of the treatments that were suggested to me focused on the functional solution to facilitating penetrative sex. And I'm talking about, obviously, pills, the Viagra and similar pills, which are fantastic, fantastic development in medicine over the last 20 years, but also the pump and the injection into the penis. They're all treatments that I've tried. They're brilliant mood killers, I can assure you. And they're not what I was looking for at all. And at various times during my recovery, they actually made me more frustrated. I understand that the treatments that are often put forward for women are similarly focused on penetrative sex and making that easier. And I just ask the question, why don't we promote, all of us, other ways of enjoying intimate moments with our partners? And there are so many of them, like sensual massage, kissing and cuddling, and, you know, so many other things that if we just talked about them with our partners and had some resource where within the system, there was some access to advice and support about this, that it would make things much easier for people. We shouldn't feel embarrassed or reluctant to talk about these things. As a cancer patient and somebody recovering from cancer, I felt at times guilty about feeling that I was entitled to have a sex life or to be thinking or talking about this topic because of the system and what it was telling me about this particular topic. So that's what I would really say people should look at options and other things that they can do. There are websites, there are, you know, kind of adult stores that have a medical angle to them if it makes people feel a bit more relaxed or more comfortable doing that. But even besides that, I think we just have to break down this idea that it's somehow dirty or wrong, or you know, our Catholic guilt should just sometimes, it should just be forgotten, and we should get on with it and try and make our lives as fulfilling and as happy as we can, particularly if we're lucky enough to have survived cancer.
And Mark, can I just ask, thanks so much for sharing that with us, but the stores that you found and the websites that you found, was that just from kind of self-directed research, or did you get any advice from any professional or anything like that?
Mostly through my own research, but actually in ARC in April, there was a really good chat, a call with Lindsay Blair, who's a sex therapist in the west of Ireland, I think. And she really gave this excellent discussion. And unfortunately, now the name escapes me, but there is a website that maybe you know yourselves that has a kind of a medical side to it or an angle to it, but will have a full range of aids and toys and so forth that are you know available to buy online. So it was a mixture of both, and you know, I would go into an adult store with my partner, and we'd make it a kind of a light-hearted event rather than try to get all stuffy about it. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not as easy as that for a lot of people, and people would still feel reluctant to talk about the topic. But there's a lot of services out there, and you know, there's a shop in town. I don't know if we're allowed to name it. You can delete it if we can't. Ann Summers, which a lot of women go into just for a bit of a laugh or half of a laugh. But mm-hmm. I'm sure those shops also would have things that might help to spice things up and make things a bit more enjoyable and entertaining for yourself and your partner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you said that there's probably always going to be a bit of a reluctance, but I think that it all has to start somewhere. So conversations like this will definitely encourage more people to open up and speak up. And so thank you so much for helping us facilitate that.
Not at all, I hope so.
Another thing that you mentioned that we think is really important, because it was one of the main kind of reasons why we started this podcast for patients, but also for their family members. And you mentioned about like partners and how important they are in this whole journey. And they play such an important role in the whole kind of overall picture. Do you have any advice for the person or partner initiating conversations around this topic? And is there any support available for them that you're aware of?
Sure, yeah. And again, this is something I'm really, really strong about, that partners are part of the story. It's a couple of things in the Prosper group, the Prosper initiative in the Mater Hospital, and in ARC, for example, anybody affected by cancer is welcome to attend the services. So it could be that, you know, your partner is the person who you're worried about, but you want to get some support and some help yourself. And the Irish Cancer Society, I know, would have a similar attitude, and you may know of others as well. So I think a lot of the services now recognize that the partner is a central part to the whole process. And in our peer group meetings within ARC, it's regularly noted that, I said this just earlier, cancer diagnosis that impacts on his ability to control his bladder or have sex. His partner is also going to have to deal with that, sometimes very long-term, hopefully not, issues. So therefore, it's important to recognize that. My advice would be to lighten things as much as possible. Reassure your partner that it's not their fault. I think a lot of men feel that they're somehow responsible for getting cancer and for getting the side effects that come from cancer, and it's not. And of course, all relationships are different, and it depends on where you are and how comfortable you feel with having that conversation. And sometimes outside support might be appropriate, and again, that's available. And I should just mention at this point that my own partner, Wallace, has been a tower of strength to myself in this regard for the last 6 years. And I honestly don't know where I'd be without him. And I just want to say that I'm very lucky. And as I said, some people might not have that ease of access with their partner to talk about things. There is outside support available, and you should make the most of it, make use of it.
Brilliant, Martin, thank you so much, and thanks for being something I'm kind of realizing as we're having this conversation is, as like nurses and healthcare professionals, how can we advise people where to go if we actually don't know the places where to send them? So it's definitely something I think we need to dive into more as nurses. Like you said, it's, you know, we know the basics of, you know, the pills and the pumps and things, but really, like you said, in order to help you guys, we need to do better as well and educate ourselves more. So thank you so much for being so honest. It's definitely something I'm going to take away from this. One thing, I suppose, and you touched off it there briefly as well, was regarding bladder function, and especially, I suppose, with men with prostate cancer, it can be significantly. And I suppose it can be often probably difficult, you know, going to the pub and you're having a few pints, and then of course you need to go more. Would you have any advice for people who are going to be going like this again, and they're going to have the issues of leaking and urgency again, and how they can maybe feel comfortable in these social situations again? Is there any tips that you would have for people?
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier on, and I for some reason, Theresa Mannion's comment came into my head, don't make unnecessary journeys. I think it's kind of appropriate in a way that you have to kind of just have a common sense approach to this. I'll talk in a second about the pads and the Kegel exercises, but just from a purely practical point of view, you know, plan your journeys, make sure you know where you're going, how close both in time and distance you are to a loo or to some the bushes or whatever you might need to just to avoid an accident. But like, it's, don't suffer in silence. It's not the worst thing in the world. If you do have a little accident or a spill, it's just part of the process of recovery. Wear dark, loose clothing. I suppose if you're thinking going out for a drink, think about having a glass of wine rather than a pint or something like that. Just less intake of fluid, less fluid. And I'd say, yeah, those exercises, the pelvic floor exercises that you'd be recommended to do if it's prostate cancer that you're recovering from, they're invaluable. They really do work, and they speed up the process of recovery. So I certainly recommend doing that. And finally, I suppose the pads themselves, they're really discreet. And unless you choose to tell somebody that you are wearing pads or that you have an issue, nobody will know you're wearing them. They do work, and you know, they'll avoid the embarrassment if you do have to have a leak. And I suppose just if you feel comfortable telling your friends or whoever you're out with that you need to sit close to the loo or on the outside seat or whatever, just have a problem with that, particularly if they know about your condition and you're in the stages of recovery. You know, I think we worry about these things too much. It was my biggest fear, actually, before my treatment. It was actually more of a fear than the sexual issue. I had this terrible fear that I was going to be permanently incontinent. And in my case, it was just for a few weeks and it got better all the time. And, you know, I admit that I was fortunate in that regard. But for the vast majority of people, within a few short weeks or a couple of months, you'll find a noticeable improvement if things are not back to normal or near normal.
I think so many are going to find so much kind of reassurance in hearing you speak. And I think it kind of highlights again the value of these support groups and how, I suppose, invaluable they really are. To be able to go to somewhere to speak to people that are going through the exact same thing could probably lessen the burden for you completely going out and dealing with these in the real world. So it just does really highlight the importance of them.
Absolutely, yeah.
I suppose something else that we see that can be an effect of some treatments is loss of fertility, which I suppose can be really distressing for some people, especially if they're younger men entering into new relationships. Do you have any advice for young men preparing for this conversation? And do you know of any support that might be available to help guide them through this time?
Yeah, actually, the Zoom call that I mentioned earlier on with Lindsay Blair, she got this very question from the floor. And it's just interesting to hear that it is an issue that people obviously have to deal with. And the strongest point she made again was that don't suffer in silence message, that if you do have a problem, whatever it might be, with bladder control or sexual function or loss of fertility or whatever it might be, don't feel that's the end of it. You're still entitled or still perfectly able to have relationships and so on. You know, we talked about it that night and I think everybody agreed there's no textbook answer. There's no actual moment where you say, you reveal what your problem is or your issue is. But I think it's only fair that you would tell the other person in a potential relationship in fairness, because not everybody is ready for taking on some issue like that. So I suppose it's just important to be as open as you can and try to pick the right time. In terms of support, again, my experience is that all of the cancer support groups would have advice and information for this topic. And certainly in ARC, there's counseling, there's direct one-to-one counseling, and there's support groups for men with cancer where we would talk about these kind of issues. And Marie, these are the type of issues that come up all the time in group discussion. And that the one thing that always occurs to people is that they realize that what they thought was a problem unique to themselves was a problem that was had, and sharing it and getting support from others is a great way of making the next step.
Absolutely. And I wonder, what do you think the barriers are for men for seeking support? Obviously, we know just in general, women are better. And I don't really know why, but I wonder, do you have any idea why it is harder for men to go and get support?
I suppose obviously there's a macho culture still existing to some degree in Ireland, although I think it's getting better. And there are historical and legacy issues that I suppose our shameful past has resulted in, and that's just the nature of it, that we men particularly feel very, very, very reluctant to talk about issues about their own bodies, about sex. I think the recent referendums in Ireland, like the Repeal the Eighth and the Marriage Equality, regardless of what your position was on those, they allowed people to have an adult conversation without the hierarchy dictating to them as to which way to go. By and large, that would apply to most of the population. And we were able to have adult discussions about these topics, which brought them into the open. And the barriers might still be there for men, particularly men of a particular age, like I'm just saying over 50, it might be over 40, let's say. But if we can raise the support services above the height of the barrier, if that makes sense, and make it easier for men to reach out and know that what they're talking about, what they're dealing with, is not so strange, is not so wrong, it's not something to be guilty about. So I think the barriers are there, but we have to make sure we give people opportunities to get support.
Absolutely. And I suppose if there is anyone listening and thinking about reaching out for help, but they don't know kind of where to go, what to do, would you have any advice for their first step?
I suppose the first thing is it's great that they've made this initial step of listening to this podcast. That's a start, and it's great. And if one person makes the next move on foot of this conversation, that would make my week, make my month. And I hope that somebody might just be encouraged to just take that step further. People in support groups, and there are so many of them around the country, they want to help. By and large, the services are free. They're professionally driven and professionally led. They provide fact-based research advice, and they are helpful. People will find, surprisingly in many cases, that it's a nice, happy environment. A lot of the cancer charities report this, that people have this idea that it's all going to be dark and gloomy. And usually the opposite is the case, that people are very positive and they want to help you and they want to help themselves. So I would just say to anybody that's thinking about looking for support, just take that big step, and you'll find that you'll be glad you did, and that there's an awful lot of people out there willing to help and wanting to help you. So go for it.
Brilliant, Martin. And we'll put up some links to some of those societies that you've mentioned, and in particular Archives as well. I know you've mentioned them a few times and we've found them fantastic. We've sent so many people there. So it really is a brilliant service they provide, and obviously yourself being part of that as well, running the support group. So thanks a million. I really enjoyed this chat.
It was great. I enjoyed it too. I really did. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Answers for Cancers podcast. Please share this podcast with anybody who you think it might help. Also, if you can like and subscribe, it lets people know we're here. You can alternatively contact us on Instagram at @theanswersforcancers_podcast. And if you have any questions on anything that we discussed today, please email us at theanswersforcancerspodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram.